Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars with West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Find out more at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. I'm Laurie Lynn, filling in for host Scott Finn this week, and we're talking about marijuana. About half of U.S. states have legalized it for medical use. Some have even legalized it for recreational use. West Virginia hasn't done either. Should we? Joining me, as always, is Rick Wilson from the American Friends Service Committee. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Laurie.
And Rick, I think we could go one of two ways here. I think we could try to compete and see how many bad marijuana puns we can fill this podcast with, or we could try to be more sober, if you will. What do you think?
I'm willing to try to take the high road on this with a few occasional lapses, I think, might be the way to go.
Excellent. Okay. Our guest today is Delegate Mike Pushkin. He's a professional musician, cab driver, and Democrat representing District 37 here in Charleston in the House of Delegates. Welcome, Delegate Pushkin. Oh,
thank you very much for inviting me on. I appreciate it.
So you're generally in favor of legalizing marijuana here in West Virginia. Can you just tell us why?
Well, I introduced a bill during a special session. The special session obviously was to deal with budget issues. I don't think it's any secret that West Virginia has serious budget issues with the revenue decrease for coming from severance tax and with plenty of corporate tax cuts that we've granted over the past 10 years. We were faced with the options of bad or worse. You know, do we raise taxes on people? Nobody wants to do that. Or do we cut essential government services? Do we cut higher education? Nobody wants to do that. So once again, we've gone back to the rainy day fund. We're taking one-time money for reoccurring expenses, and we cannot keep doing that, especially with what's going on with the flooding in the state. This is why we have a rainy day fund. This is why it's called a rainy day fund. We can't keep using it to balance a budget, and we're going to have to look at creative options to create more revenue in this state. And this is definitely an option that should be on the table, and that's why I introduced the bill.
So for you, it's primarily a budget thing?
That bill, because we were in a budget, it was during a budget session. That's why I introduced, and I asked for a fiscal note on it, and it was just simply to get the conversation started. I think that we should focus on medical marijuana.
That's what I think a lot of groups that are working on this, that's their main goal right now, I think. Is that correct?
And I think that that's more along the lines of the will of most West Virginians from what I'm seeing. And from what I'm getting in emails and phone calls, and I get lots of emails and phone calls about this issue, and the vast majority of them are supportive, and I'm mostly in support of medical marijuana.
I have a couple of things I want to ask about as far as bipartisan support. I know one fairly conservative Republican delegate, I believe, sort of spoke out in favor of medical marijuana based on some cancer treatment.
It's not a partisan issue.
Yeah, you had two pretty hardcore Republicans co-sponsoring,
there are plenty
right?
of hardcore yeah. Republicans that support. I think it would pass the Senate easily with support of a whole lot of Republicans. And of course, in the House, you have the Liberty Caucus. They support it. That's about 15 votes there. And then really a fiscal conservative. I wouldn't know if I'd call him a hardcore, you know, I don't want to label anybody, a fiscal conservative, and a very, very good friend of mine, Delegate Flanagan from Morgantown. Unfortunately, Delegate Flanagan has been sick, and he has been going through chemotherapy. He gave a very passionate speech. What we were discussing was a mandatory minimum bill, which could have increased penalties for possession with intent to deliver, but that's up for a prosecutor to decide what intent to deliver is. But possession with intent to deliver would have increased the penalties to 5 to 15 for possession of marijuana. So that's when he made that speech, and it was really one of the most moving speeches that I've heard in the 2 short years that I've been there. What he said was, well, what if someone went to Colorado and got some chocolate chip cookies for somebody that they loved and cared about because it was going to help them go through this treatment, you know, and they came back. Would that be intent to deliver? Yes. So that person would be getting 5 to 15. And the state spends a lot of money incarcerating nonviolent criminals for possession of marijuana.
Well, to be fair, I don't know the number of people incarcerated just for possession. I mean, we're talking doing actual prison time for possession is mm-hmm. fairly low. I mean,
well, luckily we didn't pass that bill would have raised.
But even
we spend
so,
a lot of money on it is how I should have phrased.
Yes, there are a lot of arrests. I think if you are in prison for something related to marijuana, it tends to be something more than just, you know, simple use possession.
In the year 2010, the state of West Virginia spent about $17.5 million prosecuting and enforcing current marijuana possession laws. Over almost 90% of those arrests were for simple possession. That's a lot of money.
You mentioned a fiscal note that I'm curious about. Fiscal notes are kind of random in this state. They sort of reflect how much they want or don't.
They never return the fiscal note, but we have looked into it. And if you include surrounding areas, like in a reasonable driving distance, because, you know, it's not just based on the small population of West Virginia. We also have some population centers close by, like Columbus, like Pittsburgh. If you include surrounding areas, depending on what the tax rate was, it could be anywhere from $116 million to $194 million in revenues.
Pretty serious.
When you're talking about the budget issues that we have in the state, where we're weighing cutting essential services versus gouging people on taxes to create a purely voluntary tax, it's something we should at least be talking about.
Well, when you consider all the stuff, that this is where I am on this. Like, I'm a beer and wine guy, let me just state that. Mm-hmm. But when you consider all the stuff that's legal,
well, I mean,
we don't care.
I'm actually a teetotaler. You know, I don't drink. You know, I don't plan on taking up marijuana just because it's legal. And I don't think most people would. I don't think there's too many drug users out there that were on their way to the dealer's house. You know what? This is illegal. Maybe I shouldn't buy it today. That doesn't go into the mindset of a drug user. But it is an industry that has been going on in this state for a very long time, and we haven't seen one dime from it.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Some people say that cannabis is West Virginia's number one cash crop already.
It is. Has been for years.
And that's partially because our climate and our terrain are pretty suited for it, and it's easy to hide it here. If you're growing marijuana illegally now, you know, how do you convert that into a legal operation? Would we have permits? We would have inspections?
I mean, that would all be worked out if we actually could start talking about the bill. And we have other states to model it after now. You know, we could look at how Colorado did it, how Washington has done it. How it worked, what hasn't worked in other states. They say the state house is the laboratory of democracies. We have other laboratories to look at. In fact, half of the country now.
Well, half of the country for medical use. Mm-hmm. Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, I think, have legalized it for actual recreational use.
Yeah, but they were medical for a while before
right,
that.
Right, first.
Yeah. And then some have just sort of decriminalized it, which is a little bit different than legalizing it.
Yeah, they're just not prosecuting it. And they allow up to a certain amount. And usually when it's decriminalized, they increase the fines. If you go over that amount or if you're selling it, they have increased fines and penalties in states where they decriminalize it.
I seem to remember.
Well, yeah, I remember California has had medical for 20 years now. So, I mean, if we really want to look what the long-term effects are on a state, we could look at California. It's been going on for a long time.
Speaking of West Virginia, I remember hearing that like High Times magazine said we had the best in the country at one point. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying.
You know, I canceled my subscription to High Times magazine years ago, Rick. But yeah, I remember hearing about that when I was in like junior high.
Just to be totally clear here, was your bill specifically for medical marijuana?
No, I was a co-sponsor of the medical marijuana bill in both 2015 and 2016. The bill that was introduced during the special session was about taxation, really. It decriminalized it, and it created like a $500 annual tax stamp. And I mean, believe me, I was under no illusion that the current Speaker of the House was going to let that bill see the light of day. That wasn't the point. And I think I achieved what I was trying to do. I got the conversation started. We're here talking about it on West Virginia Public Radio right now. I made just about, every newspaper in the state, every television station, every TV news channel picked up the story, and people were talking about it. And it showed me that there's a lot of support for the idea. I had tons of emails, phone calls, letters in support of it. Very little negative response.
Were the people who were contacting you primarily wanting a medical marijuana bill, or was it more just...
I would say there is, in this state, there's probably more of a political will for medical marijuana.
I mean, when you consider opioids and OxyContin and all the really serious things that are legal.
Look at the medicine that's legal now. I mean, yeah. OxyContin's a legal drug if you have a prescription for it.
Yeah.
That it's a deadly drug. We overprescribe benzodiazepine in this state. which is given out for anxiety. Tons of things that people could find in their medicine cabinet that are far more harmful than marijuana. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a pharmacist. Not an expert on prescription drugs by any stretch of the imagination. But one thing that we could probably all agree on is that it does create an appetite. And when somebody is going through chemotherapy and they can't eat, this could be something that they could ease their comfort and prolong their life.
So
it's at least something that we should be talking. All I've been saying is it's something that we need to talk about in the state.
What about it as kind of like a tourism draw? I mean, this is sort of crass too, but all the states that have actually legalized it are out in the West. So. Mm-hmm. Just spitballing, say that we legalize it, and then, hey, West Virginia is a place where you can go.
I mean, Colorado has seen a huge uptick in tourism because of it. Of course, they also have ski resorts, which we also
have
ski resorts, too. You know, they were an extraction state, which we are, too, and they were facing a lot of the similar problems that we have with the loss of revenue from severance taxes. And, I've spoken with lawmakers in Colorado to see what's been the downside. There hasn't been much. There really hasn't been much.
Yeah, I was looking at the numbers. It looks like this year Colorado is looking to get about $140 million of tax revenue off of $1 billion in sales.
Yeah, and that's just part of it. I mean, there have been jobs created, not just jobs in that industry, but tech industry jobs. For what it's worth, young people want to live there. I don't know if it's just because they can, legally smoke marijuana or not, but I do know the facts are, Google just opened up this huge campus near the University of Colorado where they have good paying jobs, where they're employing a lot of young people who are moving to that state. They're not having the same kind of discussions that West Virginia is having, like, well, do we pave roads or do we raise taxes or do we cut higher education or do we raise taxes? They're not having those conversations there. And I'm not saying it's a cure-all and for everything, but it's something we need to talk about.
Well, you mentioned tourism, Lori. Like in California, they have wine tours all the time, right? Can't you imagine how we might go?
But okay, I'm pretty libertarian about this in general, but let me put on my suburban mom persona here. Is that the kind of tourist that we want to attract? I mean, it's one thing if your neighbor, occasionally smokes marijuana on the weekend. Do you want someone who's going to move here because of our lax marijuana? Like, is that the type of person that you want to, attract people here?
Well, we'd rather attract people because of our lax gun laws. I mean, you could always make that argument for anything, but I do think that there's a stereotype involved with it. And maybe sometimes that stereotype is true, but I don't think it's as true as people might think. When you have a company like Google offering high-tech jobs in this huge campus in Boulder, Colorado.
The numbers are pretty, half of the population born since 1960 has tried marijuana. That's a lot of people. And that's just tried it. I think regular users, people who've used it in the past year, is more like 10-12%. But that's still a pretty high number.
It's a sea change, really, seriously, politically, culturally.
Well, just think about politically. When was it Doug Ginsburg, the Supreme Court nominee, admitted to smoking pot with his law students? I think that was like the late 80s, early 90s. And that was disqualifying. And now, it's not a big deal at all. Exactly. Clinton said he didn't inhale. And that was the 90s. And now Barack Obama is very open about having, and not just, I tried it. He was a fairly regular smoker in high school, maybe.
I haven't read his book, but he does talk about drug use.
Yeah, and I think Jeb Bush was very open about it as well. So, not only Democrats. It has changed quite a bit. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, more on marijuana. You're listening to The Front Porch right now because more than 10,000 people are proud members of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Becoming a member is so easy, it involves making a donation of any amount at least once a year. Are you a member yet? If not, go to wvpublic.org and click on the donate button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, we're back. I want to talk about hemp because I educated myself in preparing for this podcast about hemp. I had kind of thought they were the same thing. Apparently they're not. There is way less THC, the compound in marijuana that gets you high.
Hemp.
Right. And so, they have industrial hemp. It's used to make kind of concrete, plastic type stuff. I had no idea. It was really interesting. People are really optimistic about that as well as an economic driver.
I believe the programs are just now getting started. Mm-hmm. It was passed several years ago. It's gone through the rulemaking process. The seeds have been distributed. There was a little dust up over it the last day of the 2016 session where it was almost canceled because of something being removed from a rules bundle, but it had been restored by the governor. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I don't think we should be turning up our nose at any industry right now in West Virginia.
I think legally one problem is that cannabis, including both marijuana and hemp, are class one prohibited substances under federal law.
Which needs to change. Substance. It needs to change. It's saying that it has absolutely no medical value and it shouldn't be classified along with heroin and LSD.
The problem though, and this is a problem for states that legalize it as well, is that you're kind of at the mercy of the federal government to not enforce that law. And I think it was Chris Christie, right? I think he was the only one, but he said very strongly, if I am president, I will start enforcing the Controlled Substances Act with respect to marijuana. So, you know, Colorado, I'm looking at you. Right. We don't have to worry about that now.
But it
does create some legal uncertainty if you're going to start up a business and invest a whole bunch of money, not knowing, you know, down the road. And I agree with you. I think
it's more likely that it is either descheduled or rescheduled. I know that it has been the law in California for now over 20 years. They've seen several different administrations. I don't know how many different attorney generals, and it hasn't been enforced in California. I've gone through Clinton administration, the second Bush administration, and now the Obama administration.
Now, they've said publicly, you know, here are the cases in which we will enforce it, and here are the ones where we won't. But we reserve the right to change our mind at any time because it is technically the law.
Until that has changed, yes.
I don't see culturally, I agree there's the climate of uncertainty. I don't see rolling this one back in the States. I think there's been so much cultural change on this, and I'm hoping we finally learned some of the lessons of prohibition. You know, it didn't work out too well.
You know, my grandfather used to have a pharmacy down on Summer Street back in the 60s. You know, Summer Street in the 60s was a pretty wild place. And my grandfather, who was a conservative Republican, he actually ran for House of Delegates a couple times. He used to tell me, you can't legislate morality. It's never worked. And you might, you know, think it's immoral, it's wrong. Some people might think, well, that's a sin. Well, we haven't had a whole lot of success in legislating that sort of thing. Prohibition in the 20s obviously was a huge failure, created a black market, created a whole crime underworld, which we have now.
And, but where would you draw the line there? I mean, that same logic could extend to cocaine, it could extend to heroin. Should we also look at legalizing those?
I'm saying we need to have the conversation now about decriminalizing.
Well, we are having the conversation.
There are countries that have done that. You could look at what the problems they've had with it and when the successes that they've had with it. But I will tell you that the war on drugs, I don't think anybody can look at it and tell you it's been a success. We've locked up millions of Americans and spent billions of dollars. And when this war was declared 40 years ago, well, since then, our drug problem in this country has gotten worse. It hasn't worked. We have a worse drug problem than we did when we started.
Well, there's a big difference between illegalizing something and making it go away, which I think something to think about.
Ask, and this is a scary, scary thought. You can ask most high school kids if it's easier for them to get liquor or marijuana. Right now, it's easier for them to get marijuana because it's illegal, because it's not regulated.
Mm, good point. One thing that kind of came up, you know, this session, the tobacco tax passed. And always, this is something else I keep going back to. These things are legal. Why are we spending so much illegalizing this? I did the math one time and looked it up. Number of deaths caused by tobacco in this country every year is actually greater than combat deaths on both sides during the American Civil War. I mean, it doesn't count people who died of diarrhea and, you know, bad water and stuff like that.
I did not know that.
It's huge, yeah. And, like, that's legal? It took so long to have this conversation now.
I was a little bit surprised. I was looking at the White House website, and the Obama administration actually has a pretty tough line on, they don't really go into medical marijuana, but they have a pretty anti-stance on legalizing marijuana in general. One of the talking points that they made is the cost to society of legalizing it could be higher than the tax benefit, which they claim is the case with alcohol. They say alcohol costs 15 times more than the revenue that we get from taxing it, which we get a lot of revenue from taxing alcohol. That's pretty high. But
are they assuming that the usage would go up?
Yes.
Because I'm not convinced that it would. I don't think there's a whole lot of people out there, but you know what? If it was legal, I might try it. I think most people that think like that have already tried it.
You don't think, I mean, just imagine from the standpoint of a, say, 12-year-old kid, mm-hmm. you know, now it's illegal. It's something that has to happen kind of in the shadows. You don't see a lot of it. But if you see your parents' friends, you see it for sale, doesn't that kind of make it more socially acceptable?
I don't know if it makes it more or less. I know that it's being used a lot right now under our current laws. Also, we have one of the highest rates of prescription drug abuse in the state. We have where we lead the nation per capita in drug overdoses and drug-related deaths. In states, and I can tell you by the numbers, in states where marijuana is legal, those numbers have dropped. I'm not a big fan of replacement therapy or medically assisted treatment, to tell you the truth. I'm actually a big proponent of abstinence-only treatment. But I mean, I don't know why those numbers are like that, but that's how they are. Maybe it's because they're able to raise more money to put into treatment centers. Maybe it's because of a progressive view of combating the drug epidemic. I don't know, but the numbers don't lie. In states where it's legal, those horrible numbers about drug-related deaths, about prescription drug abuse, heroin use, they've dropped.
So I have something to ask. I know that there's a very serious effort underway here that's really ramping up. It has some not stereotypical supporter. I believe the Compassion West Virginia, is that the name of the group that's really supporting medical marijuana?
That is one of the groups. It's a new group that I've talked to a few of them, yes.
Okay. And then what do you think? I mean, it's hard to predict the climate after the next coming election, but do you predict this getting more and more traction?
I think if it was allowed to run, people might be surprised. That's the problem, is that the bill didn't run. But if you look at the vote, and we talked earlier about Delegate Flanagan's passionate speech on the House floor, that we reconsidered a vote right after that. And the votes changed after listening to his speech, after somebody's firsthand experience with, you know, this substance that has helped him while he's going through chemotherapy. Unfortunately, that's something a lot of people in West Virginia can relate to.
Yeah.
We have a very high cancer rate here. And after listening to that speech, the vote flipped. I've talked to many people, and it has nothing to do with political ideology. It's an idea that I believe it's time it's come, and we need more discussions like this. We need more discussions like this in committee rooms and on the House floor, too.
So would you think about introducing a purely medical bill that might have a better shot?
Yes. Once we're in a regular session, when it's not just a budget session, yes, I would introduce that.
Actually, I know a lot of groups are actually signed on to support the medical piece of it, so I think it'll be interesting to watch or see changes going on. And any new idea, I notice in the legislature, takes several years to get through.
Sometimes decades.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
Delegate Pushkin, this week Uber has come to the state of West Virginia.
Yes, I've heard something about
I'm
that.
I'm sure.
You mentioned I was a cab driver.
I did, yeah. And I know that you were also a supporter of the Uber legislation. I just wanted to talk to you.
I'll tell you the truth. I mean, as a cab driver, I'm obviously not thrilled about it, but I wasn't elected to go protect cab drivers. I wasn't elected to, you know, watch out for my own income, support my own livelihood. Uber is a company that consumers wanted. Options are always good. Competition's always good. And how could I not support that? How am I going to tell an industry that they don't belong in West Virginia? But personally, I liked the bill in 2015 much better, because it would have deregulated taxi companies too. Of course, that met an unfortunate demise in the back rooms of the Capitol. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan, but I voted for it. It's not about what's best for me or for other cab drivers. It's about what's best for the whole.
So could you see yourself switching and being an Uber driver if it really catches
on? No,
I
will not be an Uber driver.
Okay. A line
I'd
the
have
sand.
To clean out my car a lot before I could be an Uber driver, I imagine. That's
not in the bill. It doesn't say you have to have a clean vehicle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
lucky for you.
I have to think about it. I want to talk about music, by the way. I believe the first time I met you, we were doing a little thing in the park, 600 Pounds of Sin.
Yes.
I said, but you guys are good. And then I heard you do some solo things. But anyway, I'd just like to give a shout out. You're a talented musician. You've also been involved in flood relief, I believe.
And fundraising for it. And I've gone out a couple of days to actually to volunteer. But really I felt what I could do to help out. Everybody's got to do their part has been to lend to some fundraising effort.
That's good. Appreciate you doing that. You know, one thing we do on the front porch, I usually come up with a Bible verse. I know you are are you the only Jewish delegate rep
in the House? I'm currently the only Jew serving in the legislature.
So we might need to bring the rabbi, your rabbi Yerecki, I believe is your rabbi, on
to parse
this one out. But I usually do a Bible verse, and I came up with Genesis 1:29 on this one.
Okay. Something about a burning bush?
No. That's one book.
That would be Exodus, yeah. Sorry.
God said, "Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree in which there is a fruit of a tree bearing yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat." Now, what I wonder, I guess we...
You can argue with that.
I mean, yeah, that's right. And whether, you know, we would need like a rabbinical opinion would be like whether smoking would constitute eating here or whether you just have to do it in brownies if you wanted to stay within the...
Well, I can't speak for my rabbi, but I would suggest that you talk to him. You might be surprised at his opinion on it.
Oh, no, I like it. I love Rabbi Yerecki. He's great.
And that's The Front Porch. Special thanks to Delegate Pushkin for being here, and thanks to Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. Thank you for listening. I'm Laurie Lynn, filling in for Scott Finn. We'll see you next week.